This episode is brought to you by VPP Simplified. Now you can get element by element tracking and guidance for your VPP journey. Every aspect of the VPP requirements in one easy to use interactive spreadsheet. It explains every sub element in detail, contains an easy to read stoplight so you can track current status for each sub element. It provides you with a three-step verification for completion of each sub-element. There's even a notes section for you to compile language that will eventually be used for your VPP application. It even comes complete with graphs to show current state and track your progress moving forward. Look, achieving VPP star status can be tough, but understanding what it takes to get there can be simplified. This VPP gap tool will help you do that. Go to vppsimplified.com for more information.
Welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast, where we help you manage workplace safety one episode at a time. And now, your very own safety pro, Blaine J. Hoffman.
Welcome to another episode of the Safety Pro Podcast. In this episode, I want to cover ergonomics and ergonomics injuries. First, let's start with what exactly is an ergonomic injury. Now, opinions vary on how to clearly define an ergonomics injury, and the definition of the term itself may depend on the context in which it's being used. However, ergonomic injuries are often described by the term musculoskeletal disorders, or MSDs. This is the term that refers collectively to a group of injuries and illnesses that affect the musculoskeletal system. So MSDs include a group of conditions that involve the nerves, tendons, muscles, and the supporting structures like intervertebral discs. They represent a wide range of disorders which can differ in severity from mild periodic conditions to those which are severe, chronic, and even debilitating. Some MSDs have specific diagnostic criteria and clear pathological mechanisms, like hand-arm vibration syndrome, stuff like that. Others are defined primarily by the location of the pain and have a more variable or less clearly defined pathophysiology, like back disorders. Those can be tricky to diagnose. MSDs of the upper extremities include carpal tunnel syndrome. I think most of us have heard about that one. I'll talk about that one specifically here in a few minutes. But you also have wrist tendonitis and rotator cuff tendonitis. Those are popular ones as well. Both non-occupational and occupational factors contribute to the development and the exacerbation of these disorders. So that is something to consider as well. So again, carpal tunnel syndrome, tendonitis, rotator cuff injuries, effects of the elbow, trigger finger, muscle strains, and low back injuries are all sort of in this family of MSDs. Something else you have to consider, there is no single diagnosis for MSDs. As OSHA continues to develop ergonomics-related guidance material for specific industries, they have one for the healthcare industry for patient lifting, for example, very specific, but they may narrow the definition as appropriate to address the specific workplace hazards that they cover. Now, OSHA says it will work closely with stakeholders to develop definitions for MSDs as part of its overall effort to develop guidance materials. So if you're active in contributing to the development of these standards and guidance material, keep an eye out on the OSHA.gov website where they ask for public comment and they ask for key stakeholders' input. You can contribute that way. So let's get into a specific disorder, one that's very common, probably the most common that you're going to find, low back disorders. Now, research into MSD supports a relationship between the development of lower back disorders and each of the following workplace risk factors. 1, lifting and forceful movements. 2, bending and twisting in awkward postures. And 3, whole body vibration, like you would find somebody who's an over-the-road driver or forklift driver. for 10-hour shifts, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. That whole body vibration is something that you could contribute to this type of disorder. Now let's move to disorders of the neck and shoulders, right? So in this region, the research identifies two important workplace factors to consider. One, sustained postures causing static contractions of the neck and shoulder muscles, like working overhead in the automotive assembly or construction industries, that constant working overhead and holding your arms and shoulders overhead. And two, combinations of highly repetitive and forceful work involving the arm and hand, which also affect the musculature of the shoulder and neck region. So that highly repetitive reaching, grabbing type of stuff, that's going to affect the neck and shoulder. Moving on, disorders of the hand, wrist, and elbow. Now, there are several conditions to consider within the hand and wrist region. Combined work factors of forceful and repetitive use of the hands and wrists are associated with carpal tunnel syndrome and vibration from hand tools like saws, chainsaws, things like that. And by the way, those that do not have vibration controlling mechanisms are what I'm talking about, but those also contribute to carpal tunnel syndrome. Now, vibrating tool use has also been linked, very strongly linked, to hand and arm vibration syndrome, a separate condition of the hand and wrist that affects the nerve and the blood vessels. Now let's move to carpal tunnel syndrome. CTS is a cumulative trauma disorder, or CTD, throwing a lot of acronyms at you, but the show notes will have all this stuff in it. So that affects the hands and the wrists. Now, CTS is the compression and entrapment, if you will, of the median nerve where it passes through the wrist into the hand, and it's in the carpal tunnel. So that's where we get the term carpal tunnel syndrome, because it impacts that spot on the wrist in the nerve where it passes through. So the median nerve is the main nerve that extends down the arm to the hand and provides the sense of touch in the thumb, index finger, middle finger, and half of the fourth or ring finger. So when irritated, tendons housed inside that narrow carpal tunnel that will swell and press against that nearby median nerve. That pressure that causes tingling, numbness, severe pain even in the wrist and hand. And the pain is often experienced at night. The pressure also results in a lack of strength in the hand and an inability to make a fist, hold objects, or perform other manual tasks. Now, if the pressure continues, it can damage the nerve permanently, which could result in a loss of sensation and even partial paralysis. CTS develops in the hands and the wrists when repetitive or forceful manual tasks are performed over a period of time. For example, the meatpacking industry is considered one of the most hazardous industries in the U.S. because workers can make as many as 10,000 repetitive motions per day in an assembly line process, like deboning meat, and no variation in motion consequently stresses strain. It's placed on the wrist as a result, and they often result in CTS. So because there's no variation in the motion, it's the same motion over and over and over all day, every day. That's what's contributing to this. They have a very high case of CTS in that industry. Today, more than half of all U.S. workers are susceptible to developing CTS. Anyone whose job demands a lot of repetitive wrist or hand, even arm motion, which need not always be forceful or strenuous, by the way, they could be a potential victim of CTS. Now, CTS is common among, of course, as I mentioned, meat and poultry workers, but also letter sorters, carpenters, garment workers, upholstery workers, shoe and boot makers, electronic and other assemblers, packers, product inspectors, machine operators, computer keyboard operators, and even cashiers in that industry. So, you know, when you think about your typical cashier, it's going to be younger workers coming into the workforce. You imagine the types of physical disorders and things that we end up acquiring, you know, later in life as they start as a cashier, as a young worker, and move their way up through their career as they get a little older and get these other jobs, those other companies end up, you know, getting that cumulative sort of effect and hiring these employees. Now, don't get me wrong. What I'm suggesting here is that the industry as a whole, the working industry as a whole, all of us need to be mindful of these types of injuries. And since the early 80s, CTS has been reported widely among many service sector employees, including, you know, of course, office workers, newspaper and news service employees who use video display terminals. They used to be called VDTs, but, you know, computers, right? So CTS, among other health effects, is becoming a growing problem in that in those industries, across all industries, actually, because of the repetitive motions of keystroking data into computers over long periods of time. Compounding the problem is the fact that employees are often unaware of the causes of CTS and what even to do about them. So initially, the person may have fatigue and pain that develops during the workday and then disappears overnight with no physical symptoms. After a length of time, fatigue and pain develop earlier in the day. Some physical symptoms like clumsiness and the inability to hold on to items may also develop. That can affect work performance, and there could be, at some point, no overnight recovery of these, and that's when they become permanent. So when you get a full-blown case of CTS, there's constant fatigue and pain, no overnight recovery, and disturbed sleep results as well. At this point, work performance is inhibited to the extent of requiring off-duty time or light or restricted duty. So often victims of CTS, they don't associate their pain with their work because symptoms may only occur during the evening or off-duty hours. When workers finally do seek medical help, they may be given the wrong diagnosis and find the road to recovery takes a lot more time and money than had been anticipated. It's very important that as safety professionals, we look at the ergonomics of the job. And ergonomics meaning how our workers interact with their environment. And in a nutshell, not to get into a full-blown ergo lesson here, which I'm not able to do on this episode, but ergonomics is essentially, if I were to boil it down, it's the practice of making the work fit the worker and not the worker fit the work, right? So designing workstations that are adjustable, getting work closer to the employee so they don't have to reach, getting point-of-use tooling, things that they have to use quite frequently, laying out the workstation. 5S, by the way, is a great approach to use that will address a lot of ergonomics issues, reducing the number of steps somebody has to take to go and get things repeatedly, you know, keeping things at close to them, designing for comfort, you know, for long periods of time where an operator or a worker is going to be at a workstation. All those things, that is how you attack the ergonomics of a problem, is by setting up the work and designing the work for the worker and not just laying out a work area for the work and then making workers conform to it. You make the work area, you know, sort of fluid, sort of adjustable, so that first shift you have, you know, a female who's 5 foot and 100 pounds sitting in a tall chair, and then a second and third shift, you know, you've got a 6'2" gentleman who comes in. That workstation isn't going to work for both of those employees. It needs to be adjustable. So we have to approach ergonomics, you know, in a smart, realistic way if we are going to help drive this trend down going forward. Before I continue on with some, you know, other exposures to MSDs, let's take a break. Let's mention our partners in safety. They help make all of this happen for you, so I can't thank them enough. And the first of which is, of course, Who's on Location. Now, safety and security starts with knowing who is on site. That's why you need to know who's on location. Who'sonlocation.com handles visitor management, contractor management, employee attendance, and evacuation management. I spend a lot of time talking about the evacuation management piece because, you know, that's near and dear to my heart. But, you know, we also need to be concerned with even visitors that come to the site. So setting up a kiosk at the front desk where visitors sign in and out, you can even connect the kiosk to a printer for printing labels, visitor labels. You can also have non-disclosure agreements and safety statements that they have to sign. You can even set it up to where they have to sign annually. So as a visitor signs in and a year has passed, it will know it's been a year since they've signed the last NDA or last safety statement. They have to sign this document. It's really, really cool. The only way to really describe it further is to tell you to go get a free trial. You're not going to be disappointed. You don't need a credit card. You don't need nothing like that. It's a free 30-day trial of all of the options that you can get with Who's on Location. If you do end up getting an evacuation, which is what I like to focus on, of course, then you also are able to capture who's on site as a visitor, and even contractors can sign in the same manner. So look, it's available for iOS, both iPhone and iPad. It's available for Microsoft users, phone and Surface tablets, even Android phone and tablets. It's a web application, so you know it's going to work across all platforms. It's really a great end-to-end solution for visitors, employees, evacuation management. The name says it all, Who's on Location. Check it out for yourself. Get a 30-day free trial by going to whosonlocation.com. Again, you get access to all features and add-ons. No credit card required. And if you do decide to get the service, everything you set up during the trial stays with you. So whosonlocation.com, get a 30-day free trial today. Our next incredible partner in safety is none other than the official floor marking floor sign company of the Safety Pro podcast, Mighty Line Floor Tape. Now, they know how important safety is to your organization, and the breadth of the Mighty Line product line covers everything you need to implement a 5S system for the increased productivity of your facility and the safety of your workers. I just mentioned that. 5S is an incredible tool that you can leverage for productivity, efficiency, and in a big way, safety. So Mighty Line's 5S floor markings are a great way to stay organized in your workplace. They have the angles, the dots, the arrows. Those are just a few of the 5S markings that Mighty Line offers. And as far as their tape, their floor tape, just listen to some of these facts. Their patented technology makes it more durable than other floor tapes. That's because Mighty Line tape is 7 times thicker than the average floor tape. The beveled edge increases durability during forklift traffic, and the peel and stick adhesive removes easily. Best of all, it's made all right here in the USA. Go to mightylinetape.com/podcast, fill out the form, get a free sample sent right to you. That's right, try it for yourself in your workplace, mightylinetape.com/podcast. And while you're there, you can check out past episodes of the Safety Pro podcast. An incredible partner in safety for our podcast. So big shout out to Who's on Location and Mighty Line Floor Tape. Go check them out today. All right, jumping back into MSDs and how they can occur, let's talk a little bit about the length and intensity of the exposure that could cause or lead to these disorders. Now, the research indicates the greater level of exposure to a single risk factor or a combination of factors, the greater the risk of having a work-related musculoskeletal disorder. An additional important factor is the time between each episode of exposure. With adequate time to recover or adapt even, and particularly when lower forces are involved, there may be less harm to the body from repeated exposures. The intensity as well as the extended length of the exposure to the forceful, repetitive work plays a substantial role in the risk of work-related MSDs in many traditional occupational settings. Okay, so what other factors may contribute to the symptoms of MSDs other than the length of time and the intensity? Each person has physical limits, right? Or what we call a comfort zone of activities and work levels that they can tolerate without developing symptoms of MSDs. Some other factors are furniture designs or a work area arrangement that I talked about that can produce bad or lend itself to bad postures, making folks lean in, rest their elbows, hunch their round their shoulders over onto a table edge, and then the table edge is a sharp edge, 90 degree. It doesn't have a pad on it, so it's compressing the forearm or the wrist. Those types of designs, layout designs, can contribute to MSDs. Physically demanding work, which employees are not accustomed to, can lead to that. Truck drivers, this is a good one. You have long periods of time driving over the road, sitting down over the road with no physical activity, and then it's interrupted by brief periods of intense physical activity. So you go 6-7 hours all over the road driving to get off and spend 15 minutes hand packing off your trailer, you know, with boxes that are heavy and twisting and reaching and bending, and then get right back in and sit for another 6 hours. And that's that sort of cycle that actually can make it worse on your back. That's just an example. But, you know, workers who are generally out of shape can also, this also contributes to MSDs. Underlying medical conditions unrelated to the workplace, like arthritis, just age-related type stuff as well, those can actually make you more susceptible to experiencing those symptoms. Diminished muscle strength or joint flexibility, it kind of goes hand in hand with being out of shape, but maybe it's from a previous injury or disability. Those things can make that individual more susceptible to MSDs. So how do we plan for, you know, preventing work-related MSDs? Well, a good plan starts with employee involvement. You have to get the workers involved. Employers and employees can work together effectively to reduce work-related MSDs. Here are a few of the ways they can do that. Look at injury and illness records to find jobs where problems have occurred already. Look for those trends. Another one, talk with workers to identify specific tasks that contribute to pain and lost workdays. Ask them, hey, of all the things you got to do, what is the biggest pain in your neck? No pun intended, right? But ask them. They'll tell you. Another one, ask workers what changes they think will make a difference. And one of the tips I always give people, you know, especially when I was doing consulting and I was going through a facility, I was looking for, you know, what we call homemade or homegrown modifications. So whenever I saw a, you know, an office chair that had a pillow duct taped to the seat back, you know, that's somebody who it was bothering them and they went and did it, fixed it themselves, you know. That's a big red flag. To me as a safety manager, I would look at that and say, and stop and say, hey, who did you guys bring this from home? Is it, it's okay, but you know, we can get this for you. We can get this for every chair. Is this, and then I would start going around saying, hey, who's got back problems sitting in these chairs? The seat pan, they call it, right? The seat part could be, you know, too deep for some shorter workers, so they don't really sit all the way back against the backrest, and so they need that spacer in there. There's a lot of things that go into that. As I said earlier, you make the work fit the worker. And so look for workstations that have been modified with tape, duct tape, socks filled with rice for armrests, and just all kinds of good stuff. Look for signs of modifications, but basically, you know, other than that, ask workers what changes they think will make a difference in the workplace. Another one, encourage workers to report workplace musculoskeletal symptoms. And, you know, of course, establish a medical management system to detect problems early. If you do physicals, annual physicals in your workplace, work with your occupational health care provider and have them come in and do some job profiles and, you know, good job descriptions, but also come in and say, you know, this is how often they're reaching, bending, stooping, lifting, how much weight, how much overhead work. You can get a good job profile done so that we can look, when you do a annual physical or somebody does experience some work-related signs and symptoms and you send them to the Occ Health Clinic, the doctor, the physician, can actually look up their job profile and start to target what aspects of the job might be contributing to this. And that lends itself to something I mentioned earlier, where a lot of these are often misdiagnosed. It helps nail down what's truly causing the problem so you get the right treatment. And that's what it's all about, getting the right treatment and then that feedback to the employer of how we can further modify the work. Another one, find ways to reduce repeated motions, forceful hand exertions, prolonged bending, or working above shoulder height. Lower the work, get racks that are have smaller batches, sizes, or break up parts or subpart components, things like that. That can get tricky, but you can do it. There are a lot of things that you can do. Another one, reduce or eliminate vibration and sharp edges or handles that dig into the skin, pliers, things like that, scissors. you know, there are ergonomic friendly pliers and scissors and things like that. Another one is rely on equipment, not your back, but rely on equipment for heavy or repetitive lifting. Simple solutions often work best. Now, workplace changes to reduce pain and cut the risk of disability don't have to cost a ton of money, okay? They don't. I've often said you can blow $5,000 on a workstation and the employee slouches all day. So a big part of this is awareness, is training, is making sure that workers understand what ergonomics is, what musculoskeletal disorders are, how what they do every day can contribute to that, and why we need these changes to be sustainable. And it all is dependent on the end worker. And I'm not throwing the worker under the bus here. Leadership plays a big role, probably the biggest role, in making sure that we conform to the policies, procedures, and work instructions, right? That accountability. But let's face it, you can spend all this time and money and effort and have somebody that's, you know, slouching all day, and then we wonder why we have a sore back when we go home. So it takes a group effort, all of us working together to support that. For example, doing things like changing the height and orientation of the product, or use tools with handles designed so that workers won't have to bend their wrists unnaturally to use the tool. I mentioned that already. Those, it's just a common one. Other ones are, you know, you can offer workers that do like a lot of keyboard and data entry, you can offer them more frequent shorter breaks to rest the muscles, get an ergonomically shaped keyboard, things like that. You can also vary tasks of assembly line workers to avoid repeated stress for the same muscles. And, you know, we're talking about job rotation right there. I worked with a, oh gosh, it was a paper forming, box forming company, and they had formers, and they had basically four operators on a former. And every, I think it was 45 minutes, they would rotate positions for that reason. And it was a very effective way to reduce the occurrence of soft tissue injuries and muscle injuries that they were experiencing. You can also provide lifting equipment so workers won't strain their backs. I mentioned that before. You know, that's a very common one. Using lifting devices, lift assists, calm zero gravity hoists, for even for drills that they do a lot of assembly work. You could put a zero gravity hoist on a drill so that it reduces the amount of strain that they have and pressure and force exerted on lifting that drill and holding that cordless drill all day. All good stuff, okay? Look at the show notes. I'll have all these tips on there. But I wanted to kind of open the door and talk and open the discussion to talking about MSDs and ergonomics in general. We'll have more to come, especially I want to do an episode on, you know, doing a good job assessment and developing a job profile for occupational health care providers and how to get involved in that, you know, what's involved in doing that and some templates or forms you can use. So be looking for that in the future. Otherwise, shoot me your email, info@thesafetypropodcast.com, and let me know what you think. Drop me a note, leave me some suggestions for future topics on the podcast. And of course, until the next Safety Pro podcast episode, as always, be safe.